You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
The Ticat first touchdown of the year, and Hamilton gets right back in it. Touchdown, a 110-yard pick six.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Grimm.
Mike, not a good week at all for our boys in black and gold, eh?
Very underwhelming. That's not even a good word for it. Very disappointing. A very disappointing performance by the Ticats this weekend, and we're going to get into it here.
Yeah, we're just going to get right into this. I honestly don't even know how to begin. Ticats got crushed once again, this time at the hands of the lowly Saskatchewan Roughriders by a score of 37-20. I don't really know any other way to put this, Mike. This is a bad football team right now, and we've seen bad football from this team before. But personally, I always felt, especially under Ken Austin, that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. That, okay, season starts poorly, but this team will pick it up. And here, good things are happening here and good things are happening there. It's just not all coming together. I'm not so sure of that this season. And I know it's early. I do. I understand it's only two games. There's 16 games left in the season. The East Division is not good once again. The Ticats are a single win out of second place right now. I get all that. And I understand if fans are going to say that we're going to be too harsh. But I just don't know if this team just has it. Like, we've watched two games from this squad, and the same things happened in both games. This team is playing sloppy football. They're playing undisciplined football. They're just a mess. I don't see any hope here that this is going to turn around. How do you feel?
I kind of feel the same way, especially after that game. I mean, what were we talking about all offseason? The offensive line and the secondary, and that's seems to be our biggest problem so far. Mind you, we're missing some key players in the secondary, but our offensive line is set. That's probably going to be the group. They might fiddle around on the right tackle position with Swindle and maybe bring someone back that they released or sign someone else, but it's not all him. The whole line is just collapsing, and Caleros is scared. He's scared back there. He's dropping way too far back, even when it's not necessary to, because he feels like he's going to be pressure on every play. Now, I'm not inside his head, but that's what I feel like he's feeling. So we have a lot of problems right now, and we need a quick turnaround, because you say about the East that it's not very good again this year, but we don't play the East for at least another 4 weeks. We got some tough Western opponents coming up, and by the time we do play the East, we could be 0-6, 0-7, and we could be in a lot of trouble. So I have a lot of concerns right now, that's for sure.
The next five games are against Western opponents. We'll get to it later, but this week the home opener's against BC, then they get Edmonton, then they're off to Calgary, and then they hit Edmonton, then they come home to play Winnipeg, and then after that's finally when they face another Eastern opponent in Ottawa. This team could very easily be 0-7 by the time we get to mid-August, and the season could be done before Labor Day, and it's been a while since the Ticats season has been over by Labor Day, and I'm not looking forward to that. I hope this team can turn it around. I just don't see any reason why anyone should think they will. So, speaking of this game specifically, Mike, you brought up the offensive line. I'm sure you want to touch on that, but what do you just give us your thoughts on the overall offensive performance in this game? Because I think you and I are going to share some opinions that this was not very good.
Oh, let's just take a look at the numbers. I mean, Zach was 19 for 34 for 189 yards. Now, he didn't throw a pick, but, I mean, that's the only positive thing about this. He had one TD. That's a good thing. But his percentage is just way off. He's just doesn't look like the quarterback that we brought in a couple years ago. He doesn't have that confidence. And a lot of it has to do with the offensive line, but some of it has to be placed on him as well. I think he's panicking a bit back there when he doesn't have to. I don't even, you know, we could talk it like to relieve some of the pressure off this guy. They could run the ball and maybe put in some screens in the game plan, you know, to make these defensive tackles and linebackers from just pinning their ears back and going right at him, because the scheme right now is not working. And another thing that I found interesting was the play calling was taken away from Steph Potasik after the first game, and Austin is doing it again. And I don't think that's the right course of action. It was only one game. You don't have to come in there and take over the reins. I just find that a little bit troubling.
Caleros, so the CFL brought in this new quarterback rating system. I'm sure you've seen it for 2017. And Zach Caleros is the bottom-ranked quarterback right now. This is a rating system that rates quarterbacks out of a total of 100. Zach Caleros right now is at 31.3. The league average is 74.8. The next worst quarterback so far this season has been Matt Nichols, and he's at 64.8. He is more than double. His quarterback rating is more than double that of Zach Caleros's right now. And they both played two games, so it has nothing to do with Matt Nichols having extra time. They've both had a bye week already. But man, oh man, like, you just watch this team operate on offense, and there's just something missing. You're right. Caleros looks like he has happy feet, doesn't look comfortable back there at all. But we talk about it, and probably have been talking about it now, going on three seasons. The lack of a running game with this team is what's hurting it almost more than anything else. And the team made a decision to swap out C.J. Gable this week and start Ross Scheuermann, and the numbers were pretty much the same. Scheuermann even had his pass blocking, which is one of the reasons that apparently Gable was taken out of the lineup was that he when they looked at the film, he wasn't great at pass blocking against the Argos. Scheuermann goes in there, and TSN has started pointing out the times when he was off in his pass blocking schemes, and he rushed the ball and had, you know, a few. I think he had 19 yards in this game, so he had 10 more rushing yards than C.J. Gable did in the game before that. But if Gable was sat for poor performance, you got to think that Scheuermann's going to get dumped too. Like it seems like they made this move to bring in this new back, and nothing changed. Didn't matter. And I'm not shocked by that, because I think the problems with the Ticats offense is philosophical and not personnel. So this didn't surprise me at all. What do you think?
I'm right there with you, buddy. I mean, Sherman, 5 carries for 19 yards, 3.8 yard average. Now, 5 carries, I mean, that's not enough for any running back, but he did catch the ball to the backfield a little bit. He had 4 catches for 29 yards. But yeah, not much of an improvement, if any. I didn't really notice the blocking of Scheuermann, but if the TSN guys were pointing it out, then I'm sure it's true. And if that's the reason why he's put in there, then I don't see him staying in another week for a guy that's a lot of experience as C.J. Gable, and has proven he's a player over the years. I can't see them not bringing him back into the starting lineup.
Going into this game, I think we talked about it last week that the Riders like to rush three, and if they rush three, the Ticats should be able to exploit that. The Riders didn't rush three a lot in this game. It was a lot of four-man rushes, but they were still getting there. And man, oh man, did the tackles have a bad game, don't you think?
They really did. Fulton is obviously the more experienced guy and has a proven record in this league, but he had a rough game. He was beaten on several occasions, and so was Swindle. So you have that pressure off the edge, and Zach's going to be running around all game long, and he was.
Is there anything from the offense that you could take positive from this? Because I don't think there's much.
There's not much. There's that the Saunders kid that they put in replacement of Kevin Elliott, I believe. Had a pretty good game, 6 receptions, 78 yards. You know, you noticed him out there. I was impressed with him. But other than that, not too much to talk about.
How the hell does Luke Tasker get 2 passes thrown his way and go catchless in a game? That's inexcusable.
Yeah. I mean, Tasker is Claros's guy. If the offense is struggling, that's usually who they go to in the passing game, and he was pretty much invisible out there.
And it's not like Saskatchewan has this great secondary either. This is one of the reasons why I'm still so down on this team. They scored 1 offensive touchdown in 8 quarters. They have more on special teams defense combined than they have on offense after 2 games, and this is starting to be reminiscent of those terrible offensive teams from the mid-2000s where they would score 11 points, 15 points. Like this, you can't score 20 points in a CFL game and expect to win very many. I don't know what the issue is here, and that's the big problem, because you look at the team, and it's a talented bunch. They have talent on this team. It's not like they're the expansion Red Blacks from a couple years ago, where their top receiver was a guy who would have been the fifth receiver on any other team. They got some guys in this team that can play ball, and it just seems like it's not clicking.
It all goes back to the O-line. If there's no time, I think that maybe Austin's offense takes a little bit more time to develop for the receivers. There needs to be some time for the quarterback, for the receivers to make their routes and get open. And that might be part of the problem too. Now, I'm not sure, I'm not in the coaching room, but that's just a thought that I had, that it might be it takes longer for this offense to develop when they're out there playing. So that could be part of the problem.
There isn't a whole lot to say about the defense either. It was bad. 464 yards of offense given up. They gave up 380 through the air. We all know I like Kevin Glenn. And I've said on the show many times how I like Kevin Glenn. I've said online many times how I like Kevin Glenn. But they gave up 37 points to the Riders and two rushing touchdowns to Kevin Glenn. Kevin freaking Glenn had two rushing touchdowns. Now, one was a one-yard plunge. Fine, that happens. The other one was a called draw play, and Kevin Glenn went in basically untouched. Kevin Glenn does not do that. Kevin Glenn might be the only quarterback who would be in that Danny McManus range of, I never want to run with the, like, he never runs. And they called a bloody draw play from the 5-yard line, and he scampered in for a touchdown. Just inexcusable.
Yeah, the defense was inexcusable as a whole during this game. I mean, Kevin Glenn had two rushing touchdowns, plus he had two passing touchdowns, 380 yards. He was just tearing it up out there. I mean, the defensive line did get some pressure at times, but it just simply wasn't enough. The secondary was horrible again. Yeah, not much more to say about it, but just a terrible performance.
And this is the thing so this team has played two games. They've given up nearly 1,000 yards of offense and 69 points. You're not going to win any football games giving up nearly 35 points a game and 500 yards of offense. You're going to lose way more than you win. And my biggest problem with this game in particular is that, and I said this a little bit earlier, all the issues from week one were still there. But the one that I think bothers me the most is the complete lack of ability for this team to stop the opposition on second down. Saskatchewan was 17 of 26 on second down conversions. That is way, way too high. And the biggest issue here is they were picking up long ones. There was a drive that I noticed, and I made a mental note of this, and I actually wrote it down while I was watching the game. There was a drive in the fourth quarter that the Ticats had just scored to make it 27-20. They seemed to have a bit of momentum. And then on the next drive, they had the Riders at 2nd and 14 from midfield, and they allowed them to pick it up. Then they had them two plays later, 2nd and 10, would have ended the drive if they would have stopped them there. They allow Nick Dembski to pick it up. That extends the drive. The Riders end up kicking a field goal to put them up 30-20, and that was pretty much it. That, to me, the defense in that situation, the offense has driven down, had maybe their best drive of the season. And they get the touchdown. They're down by one score. The defense has got to get a stop, and they didn't. And this, to me, was a problem against Toronto. It's a problem against Saskatchewan. If this continues to be a problem, this team is going to have a very hard time winning football games.
It's been a problem for years with this team. There needs to be a philosophy change when it comes to 2nd and 10 and longer, because we've been watching this for a couple years now where they give up that first down when other teams would be making that stop and giving some momentum to the team, getting the ball back for the offense. This team fails. You can pretty much bet on it. It's going to fail if it's 2nd and 10 or longer.
Yeah, I have no faith in this team getting the offense off the field and then getting their offense on the field. I just don't trust they'll be able to do that. But to be positive for 1 second, the Justin Rogers pick six was pretty cool.
That was a gorgeous play by him, and I thought, okay, so they did march down the field on us, but we made that play, and hopefully this is a starting point for the team to pick up their pants and play like a real football team, but evidently it was not.
Yeah, what happened on the very next drive? Riders marched down and scored a touchdown anyway, so
yep.
It's there's there's some problems with this football team that were very evident from this game, both on offense and defense. Before we move on, special teams, I guess we should say that Sergio Castillo is still perfect on the year, kicked two extra points and two field goals in this game. So you mentioned earlier that we had worries in the offseason. You didn't mention the kicking game. That was a big one. But so far, yeah. So good, I think. Now, he did have that after conceding the safety, he did have that kickoff that went out of bounds, which is inexcusable. But aside from that, he's been pretty solid all season.
Yeah, I've been happy with his performances. Yeah, he can't complain with being perfect on field goals. Yeah, that kick out of bounds really hurt the team. But that's his only blemish on the season, I'd say, so far.
Yeah, for sure. So this week we're adding something new. To end the game, we're going to give out what I'm calling our Glorious Player of the Week. And this week it is going to a man that you mentioned during your offensive segment, Jalen Saunders. 6 catches for 78 yards. Looked really good out there for a guy playing his first CFL game. Product of the Oklahoma Sooners, so you know he's got a pedigree as a good football player. He was drafted into the NFL by the New York Jets. So he's got some talent. I thought he played really well, and in a game where the team had really nothing going for it, it was nice to see him step up in his first game and play well. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him in the coming weeks. I thought he was a real spark to the offense when he had the ball in his hands.
Yeah, I was impressed by him. Interesting to see if they insert Kevin Elliott again or if they go with the combo of Jalen Saunders and Jasper Collins. So really impressed with his first game.
Well, Saunders had 6 catches for 78 yards, led the team, and Collins had the only touchdown. So the two new guys did contribute in that way. So it wasn't a total bust in bringing those guys in. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this goes forward. So that's it for the game. The less said about that, I think the happier both of us will be. So let's move on to some news. There's no Ticats news to talk about this week. Literally none. They did nothing.
Wait. Actually, breaking news. Oh, boy. Oh, the Ticats suck. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's breaking news? I thought that was well-known news. Okay. Breaking news, Ticats suck. Okay, whew. So let's move on to some CFL news. There's a few things I'd like to talk about there. First and foremost, I want to talk about a surprise release, at least for me, today. The Ottawa Redblacks let go of A.J. Jefferson. And look, we talked about how bad the Ticats secondary has been, and at the risk of becoming, quote-unquote, that fan, the Ticats do need some secondary help. You got to think they kicked this guy's tires. He was, I'm pretty sure he was an East Division All-Star a couple years ago. He's got talent. They need help back there. They can't be any worse in the secondary than they are right now. This is a guy with CFL experience. I think everyone who watched the game on Saturday saw the graphic that showed 4 of the 5 players in the secondary are playing in their first CFL season. So, hey, why not try to bring this guy in or at least, you know, get in contact with him, see if he'd be interested in coming here. Because he, as a veteran, he's got to be able to help. I mean, they can't be any worse, can they?
No, they can't be, I don't think. Bring him in. I mean, if you can, if it fits the salary cap and all that stuff. I mean, this guy, I was a big fan of his when he came into the league. Actually, he had a good year with the Argonauts and played with the Red Blacks last year, anybody you can bring in that has had some level of success in this league, I think you have to take a look at him. And he's not that old. I mean, he's only 29, so, I mean, that's not super young, but at the moment, if you just brought him in for a quick fix or whatever, I mean, he's definitely not over the hill. So I would love for them to bring him in.
Now, maybe I'm crazy, but think of this. You have a secondary. Once we get all these guys healthy, hopefully, you know, like crossing the fingers that these guys come back healthy, a secondary of A.J. Jefferson, Abdul Kane, Craig Butler at safety, and then Emmanuel Davis and Courtney Stephen. That's pretty good. Those are some talented players there. That secondary would become a strength, no?
You'd think so, unless it's a coaching fault that these guys aren't playing well, which I don't think it is. So if we had those guys, I think we could be a pretty formidable secondary. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so this isn't really news per se, but it's something that popped up last week after we recorded that I wanted to talk about because it kind of bugged me. So the news part of this is that the Saskatchewan Roughriders signed offensive lineman Jeremy Zver. Now, that's not usually something that we would talk about. He was a draft pick in the draft this year. I think he went in the second round to the BC Lions. We don't tend to talk about, you know, guys from draft pick signing. That's not something we do. We can let the guys out in Saskatchewan talk about the Saskatchewan news. But what's interesting to me about this is that the Riders signed him away from BC because the Lions offered him a spot on the practice roster that he declined, making him a free agent. He's from the Regina area. I believe he played for the Regina Rams in university, and he signed with his hometown team. Now, there's been some hand-wringing and a little bit of complaining, especially amongst some people out in BC, that this was an underhanded move, and it goes against the unwritten rules of the game, that you don't steal players from other teams, and that the Riders did this last year when they took Dylan Guy and the draft pick's name, who, when he was drafted, I knew I couldn't pronounce. I think it's S.A. Murabure or something like that. We talked about how we couldn't pronounce it years ago. They took them last year and signed them after they declined practice roster positions as well. So people are out there talking about these unwritten rules of the game and how the Riders are somehow cheating's not the right word, but they're doing something underhanded by stealing a player that our team took in. But to me, I think that's nonsense. And these unwritten rules that exist in sports, to me, are bunk. I think we need to have, if you want this to not happen, then write a rule. Make it written down and say, this cannot happen. Come up with some reason, like maybe you have a special practice roster spot for Canadian draft picks or a special practice roster period for Canadian draft picks and a way to develop Canadian draft picks or whatever it is that you want. Come up with something that's a rule, because otherwise, I think this is perfectly fine. I think what the Riders did is they're trying to make their football team better. And that's what they're in this to win. They're not in this to be friendly and buddy-buddy with everyone else. I didn't see a problem with it. And I kind of got annoyed by people who said that they did. It just, what are you supposed to do? The guy goes on the practice roster. He's going to make $500-$600 a week living in Vancouver. That's not going to be enough. Or he can make actual money by being on an active roster. Because one of the things is when he declines a PR spot or team, or if he's plucked off the practice roster and he goes to a new team, they have to activate him. So he has to be on the game day roster. Therefore, he's getting a game day check. I don't see anything wrong with this at all. What do you think?
I'm in total agreement with you on this one. To me, if it's not an actual written rule, then the team should be allowed to take advantage of that. It's helping their team, and it's helping the player that was on the practice roster who was making $500 a week or whatever you said. And it helps him too. Like, he's a hometown, you know, he's from the province of Saskatchewan. He'd probably rather play there than in BC on a practice roster spot. So I have absolutely no problem with this transaction.
Yeah. Do you remember a few years ago, I think it was Dustin Penner, the Edmonton Oilers signed Dustin Penner to an offer sheet when he was a restricted free agent, and he was with the Anaheim Ducks, and Brian Burke was a general manager at Ducks, and he flipped out, wanted to fight Kevin Lowe over it. And it was like, you don't do this. This is underhanded. It's cheap. Yep. But the thing I don't understand is he's a restricted free agent. The mechanism is there to allow them to sign players to make their team better. And why shouldn't a general manager use anything in his power to try to make his team better? As long as he's playing within the rules, I have no problem with it.
No, it's his job. It's his job to do whatever it takes to make his team a winner. And that's what the Riders are doing. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's absolutely ridiculous. People flip out over this, I think. But that's my two cents. I'm glad you agree with me. It would have been fun to kind of spar with you on this. But I just don't see how anyone can look at this and say that what the Riders did was in any way wrong.
And it's like the fans are mad about it or whatever. But do you even know this guy's name before he was taken away? I mean, or not the Riders fans, the BC Lions fans, sorry. Did you even know this guy was on the practice roster? I mean, it's not like he's a big name or anything. I don't see the harm in it.
So you want to talk a bit about Matt Nichols. Now, before I let you get into this, I have to be honest here. I did not see the Calgary-Winnipeg game. I chose to spend my Friday nights at the movie theater watching Spider-Man Homecoming. Quick review, if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's awesome. One of the best Spider-Man movies I've ever seen. This kid is amazing in Spider-Man. If you love Spider-Man, go see Spider-Man Homecoming. That out of the way, you want to talk about Matt Nichols. Why do you want to talk about Matt Nichols?
At the start of the game, I was thinking to myself, man, Matt Nichols throws one of the most beautiful balls I've ever seen in my life. I mean, his spiral is magnificent. I think he throws it well, but then he kind of let me down because I was getting my hopes up for this guy. Maybe this guy is going to be a really good quarterback. Marches his team down the field, and then he throws a bad interception in the end zone, which really, really took the momentum out of the Bombers. And to be honest, I just wanted to see the Bombers beat the Stampeders for once. They seem to just get crushed by them a lot. And, you know, not a Bombers fan, but I feel bad for their fans. And then he threw another bad pick later on that went for a pick six. And he just very, very inconsistent. And I think he needs to really tighten that up if he wants to be a starting quarterback in this league.
I made it known a few weeks ago that I'm not a big Matt Nichols fan. I think he's mediocre, very much so. I think he's a fine player, probably is a nice gentleman, but I don't know if he's a starter in this league. But that's just me. And some of the things you said that occurred in this game are the reasons why. I don't have a lot of faith in him to get it done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of on the fence about him. I'm waiting. I mean, you know, watching this whole season, see what happens, see if he can impress me and change my mind.
Matt Nichols, if you're listening out there, which I know you're not, you got to impress, you got to impress Mike.
Yeah, write it down on your list, Mike
okay.
Graham.
Ready for Bozo of the Week?
Yeah.
I think anyone.
You gotta go Will Hill, right?
Yeah, I think anyone who's listening to the show knows. We haven't talked about it yet. I think this is the obvious pick.
Now, Will Hill has been an impressive player so far this season with his block punts, and I think he's done a pretty good job when he's been in there. But this incident cannot happen. Grabbing the ref like that is just inexcusable. It shows his level of maturity, I think. Maybe one of the reasons why he's not playing in the NFL anymore. Yeah, he's got to be the Bozo of the Week this week.
So, obviously, that happening in the last game of the week, that has sparked a lot of talk on social media the last couple of days. Where do you stand on what his punishment should be, Mike?
I've heard people saying 5 to 6 games. I wouldn't be totally against that necessarily if that's the way it came out, but I just don't see it happening. I think if you give that guy this many games, I think the union is going to have a problem with that. I think there'll be some, yeah, I think the people say a lot about the CFLPA, but I think they'd probably step up to the plate on this one. I think he'll probably get 2 games, maybe at the most 3.
He's not getting more than 2. I don't think there's any way he gets more than 2. I saw people calling for suspending him for the year. I saw 10 games. I saw 6 games. There's no way he's getting any more than a 2-game suspension, which will probably be appealed down to a 1-game suspension. I looked it up. I tried to find incidents in which players and officials across all sports really kind of got into it. Football-wise, especially in the CFL, obviously we have the Ken Austin incident from last year. That got him a pseudo suspension for 1 game and a $10,000 fine. If Will Hill gets more than that, the PA will appeal. They'll use that as a precedent. I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, probably going on 14, 15 years ago, Ed Hervey took his helmet off and hit a referee in the face with it. It was during the Labor Day Classic against the Stamps. I think it was 2002, 2003. I can't remember the year exactly. He got a team-imposed 1-game suspension, and yeah, he wasn't aiming to hit the ref, but he had his helmet in his hands with the intent to hit someone in the head with it, and that should have been a lot more than 1 game. And then I think the 2 most famous incidents outside of the CFL, when Roberto Alomar spit in John Hirschbeck's face back in 96, that got him a 5-game suspension. And Dennis Weidman, just a couple years ago with the Calgary Flames, he plowed into an official, and initially he got a 20-game suspension, and it was reduced to 10. So when you look at sort of those and take those into effect, and I know that the ones outside of the CFL don't really matter, but you look at what's happened in the CFL with sort of abusive officials, I can't see him getting any more than 2 games. I don't think it warrants any more than 2 games, to be perfectly honest. It was Bozo material, no doubt about it. But to say this kid deserves to be gone for a year or anything like that, that's excessive.
Yeah, I mean, he grabbed him, which is totally wrong and should never be done. He didn't do anything worse than that. It wasn't a physical, he didn't hit him or pull him down or anything like that. And trust me, I know it's wrong. It's very wrong. But yeah, I don't see or agree with giving him half a season, a full season or something crazy like that.
No, you just don't see suspensions that long in any sport. Unless it's something super egregious. We're talking like Malice at the Palace, Ron Artest fighting fans.
Right.
Like that's those instances, or even PED uses or domestic violence charges. This is not that. This was heat of the moment. Something happened in the game. I've even seen some people, and these are non-Ticat fans, say it looked more like Hill was demonstrating what was happening to him. Still an idiotic move to show that on the official instead of doing it to yourself. But I'm really curious. We're probably going to find in the coming days what the punishment will be. I'm kind of curious to hear the referee's side of the story on this, because right. I think that will determine what the punishment really is. If the referee comes out and says, no, he was aggressively grabbing me and threatening me or whatever, then I think it's going to be a lot larger. But if it's something more to what I was saying, like, look like he was demonstrating something and if there was no malice to it, I think you could see a lot more lenient suspension or fine. You ready to preview this upcoming game?
Yeah, I
get the sense of, do we have to, coming from that sigh?
Yeah, you assumed right.
Okay, so the Ticats will finally play at home this week. They host the BC Lions Saturday night at Tim Hortons Field. Okay, so obviously Ticats are still searching for their first win of 2017, and the Lions come in on a two-game winning streak, having defeated the Argos and the Alouettes on the road the last 2 weeks. I think this goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. This is not going to be an easy one for the Ticats, as the Lions come loaded with a defense that is allowing just 20.3 points per game and an offense that has scored the third most points in the league so far this season, behind just Calgary and Ottawa. So, Mike, let's start us off. What do the Ticats need to do offensively to slay the mighty BC Lions?
They need more protection for Claros. I don't know how they do that. They want to bring in, double tight end sets or whatnot, because the guy just needs more time. That's the bottom line. If there's less receivers out there, so be it. He has more time. If the receivers have more time to get open, we might have some success. But it's gonna be. I don't think that's gonna happen. I think we'll be the same old strategy from Ken Austin and company, and we're gonna be in a lot of trouble, because, like you said, we're playing a top notch defense that's just gonna eat us alive.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. Defensively, Mike, pretty much. Here's what I have. Here's literally what I have written down. Close their eyes and hope for a miracle. Yeah. This Ticats defense hasn't been able to stop anyone. And now we get Jonathan Jennings, Manny Arsenault, Brian Burnham, Nick Moore, Chris Rainey, and Jeremiah Johnson coming in on Saturday. That's an all-star team of players right there. The Ticats so far in the season have allowed 400-plus yard receivers. They allowed 3 versus the Argos, and they allowed Damon Roosevelt to go off against them in Saskatchewan. When you're playing Manny Arsenault, Brian Burnham, and Nick Moore, that's one if not two of those guys are going to go off for 100-plus yards. And then you got Jeremiah Johnson, who, for my money right now, is probably the best running back in the CFL. So you add that in with all that receiving talent, and this is going to be a rough, rough night for the Ticats. However, I do have one silver lining, Michael. Jonathan Jennings has shown that he is not immune to making some boneheaded throws. We've seen them in the first two games. Ill-advised passes that get intercepted. The offense hasn't always necessarily been in a rhythm. So if Jennings is going to make 2 or 3 of those boneheaded plays a game, if he gets those in this game, the defense has got to make him pay. They have to. If he's getting too loose with the football, throwing into tight coverage, throwing into double coverage, not holding on to it when he's running with the ball, they've got to find a way to knock him off his game, because if he's a little off, that means the offense itself is a little off. Can they do it? At this point, I don't really have faith that they can, but that to me it's the one area where I think that they could find a way to turn the game, is if they can make Jennings make bad plays, and we've seen him do it. But outside of that, I think this is going to be a very, very long and difficult and frustrating night for the defense.
Yeah, and the scariest thing is about the BC Lions offense is we haven't seen the best of them, not even close. And this might be an opportunity for them to play a lackluster defense and really take off, really set the tone for the rest of the year for this team that has a ton of talent on the offensive side of the ball. So it's a pretty scary situation we're walking into next weekend.
It sure is. So for me, that's about all I want to talk about from that game. I look, the Ticats are the Ticats. They're who they are right now. Until I start seeing something from them, I don't really think there's a whole heck of a lot that we can do to talk them up or really say, hey, this is how they can win, or this is what they need to do. They're just not a good football team right now, Mike.
They are not. They're nothing we've seen tells us that this team is a contender or even, a last place playoff team. It's just, it's really hard to have confidence in this team right now.
Sure is. So people are going to find out how confident we are in this team, because next up we're doing our CFL picks. We start with the game Thursday. We got the Toronto Argonauts heading to IGF to play the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Mike, who you got in this one?
You know what? The Argos showed me quite a bit in the second half of that game last weekend. So I'm going to choose the Argos. I might be wrong on this one, but you know, Winnipeg's at home, and yeah, I'll go with the Argos.
Okay. This was the toughest one for me to pick this week, if I'm being honest. These two teams look to me to be very, very similar. Like, they're both, I think they're both good, but neither are great. They both have flaws, but they also both have some, like, they got some explosive playmakers. We saw the Bombers a couple weeks ago put up 43 points against Saskatchewan. We saw that you mentioned the Argos in the second half against Ottawa. They got Ricky Ray. They got SJ Green. That connection is clicking. Green went for over 200 yards against the Red Blacks. So this has the makings of being a pretty good game. I'm going to go with the home side just because they're at home. When you have two teams that I think are pretty equal to one another, I tend to skew towards the home team. So give me the Bombers in this one, although I'm very, very unconfident in this pick. Friday, we see a doubleheader. The first game takes place in Montreal as the Calgary Stampeders head there to play the Alouettes. Mike, you're picking this one.
Got to go with the Stamps. They're just, I say it week after week, I just can't pick against them until I see them falter. So got to go with the Stamps. And Montreal, you know, they're an okay team. They're not great. So Calgary's a great team, and I'll pick the great team.
As bad as the Ticats have been, Montreal still hasn't scored 20 points in a game so far this season. The Ticats have at least done that. So they're going up against a juggernaut in Calgary. There's no way I'm not picking the Stamps in this one. Although Calgary has had their issues in Montreal. Last year, last week of the season, they lost, although a bunch of their starters didn't play. They lost a couple years ago in Montreal. Their trips to Montreal have not been great, but I say it every week. Until the Stamps give me a reason not to pick them, I'm picking the Stamps. Second game of the doubleheader sees the Ottawa Redblacks fly into your neck of the woods in Edmonton to take on the Eskimos, who are coming off a bye. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I'm going to have to go with the Eskimos. Not a great performance against the Alouettes the last time they played, but I think they've got a pretty good team, and I think they'll be victorious in this one in a close game.
Yeah, they're coming off the bye. I always like teams coming off a bye, even though the Ticats showed that that doesn't really matter, but that's because they suck. They're at home. Oh, there's just something about Ottawa that this year, they're so weird to try to figure out. They look great against Calgary. They get the tie in week one. They have the shootout in week two. They're up big against the Argos, and they at home, and they just biff that one. They're still winless. Them and the tie, they're up on the Ticats by 1 point because of the tie, but Ottawa looks like they could be a good team, but there's just seems to be something there that's stopping them. And they're going to go into Edmonton. And again, like I said, I don't think these are two even match teams. I think Edmonton's a lot better, but I'm siding with the home side. I'm taking the Eskimos. And the final game of the week sees the BC Lions on Saturday night head to Tim Hortons Field to take on our Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mike, who are you taking in this one?
Well, worst team in the league playing one of the best. So I got, you know, I'd love to pick the Ticats, but I just, you know, it's just too dumb of a pick to go with the Ticats, so I got to go with the Lions.
I hope I'm wrong. I want the Ticats to win this game. I want them to win it big. I want this to be the start of their turnaround. But until the Ticats win a game, I can't in good conscience pick them, and I definitely can't pick them against the team. Knowing what this team's flaws are, the Ticats I'm talking about, and knowing what BC has, there's no way that even the most diehard of Ticats fans can think the Ticats will actually win this game. If they do, hey, I will gladly come on here next week and eat crow. I'm sure you would too. But based on what we've seen so far this season, there's no reason to pick the Ticats in this one, and I'm not. I'm also taking the Lions.
You gotta.
This is a bad football team playing a pretty decent one. And as much as it pains me, I don't think there's been many times either of us have not taken Hamilton in the 3 years we've been doing picks, but there's just nothing after 2 weeks. If they would have lost to Saskatchewan, but they would have shown me that they're a competent football team, I probably could have convinced myself to take them. But after seeing a similar performance that we saw in week one, it looks like this team is what it is, and that's pretty bad. And that's not a recipe for success against a Wally Buono coach team.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so last thing this week is a holdover question. I think everyone might remember that we talked last week about getting a pretty in-depth question from one of our longtime listeners and frequent question askers, Adam. He put this one on the Three Down Nation comment section, and we decided to give ourselves a little extra time to do this. So here's how it's going. He asked us, says, one of the things I wish the CFL had was an all-Canadian all-star team. And he asks us, who would be our all-Canadian team? Here are some caveats. We can start 4 wide receivers and 2 running backs, or 5 wide receivers and 1 running back. And defensively, he allowed us some flexibility in that we could start the DBs at any position, so we didn't have to find a boundary half and a boundary corner and anything like that, any position. And he allowed us to play a DB at the Sam linebacker position. So, with that out there, Mike, let's start off. Who are your Canadians is who he's asking, and I think we should start on defense, and I think we should start with the marquee position, and that's quarterback. Who did you pick as your all-Canadian quarterback?
I went with Andrew Buckley. Now, there's basically only two picks out there, two logical picks, Buckley and Brandon Bridge in Saskatchewan, but I don't know. There's something about Brandon Bridge that I don't like his throwing motion. I haven't seen enough of him. Mind you, I haven't seen a lot of Buckley passing the ball either, but it's a 50-50 thing, and I went with Buckley.
I went with Buckley, too. I was thinking, at first, I was like, no, Brandon Bridge, he's got a big arm. Probably out of the two, he's going to get the chance to start first. But every time Buckley's on the field, if Bo Levi Mitchell wasn't there, I feel like Buckley would actually be the starter. You know what I mean? Whereas I think if Kevin Glenn was out of Saskatchewan, I think that they would bring someone else in and not start Bridge. And then this came also when we got the question came after Buckley had that 60-yard run against Ottawa, and it was like, yeah, you got to pick that kid. So yeah, I also went with Andrew Buckley. Although I don't think either pick is wrong because Brandon Bridge I think he's shown that he can play in this league as well. But yeah, I went with Buckley as well. So next up, we got the running backs. I'm curious, before you name who you picked, did you go with one or did you go with two?
I went with two.
Oh, same here. So who are your two?
Messam and Harris.
Oh, okay. We got the same ones. Why'd you pick them?
Well, Messam is just a fine running back, has been for years. He's the number one guy in Calgary. He does his job tremendously. And Harris, even though I'm not the biggest fan, he is a good player, and I had to have him on my team.
Yeah, it's when you're looking at Canadian running backs, I feel like it was easier to go with two running backs and four receivers than one and five. Mm-hmm. And look, these guys are starters in this league. They're all stars in this league. I think anyone who would make these teams would pick those two guys without even thinking twice. So those are, I think, the obvious choices. And look, just look at their resumes. It all stacks up. So at the receiver position, that means you got four. Do you want to go? You want to name your four first, or do you want to go one to one? What do you think you'd like to do here?
I'll name all four, and then we'll get yours.
All right, cool. Hit me up. Who are your four?
I got Sinopoli, Clarence Denmark, Lamar Durant, and the last one was a tough one, but I went with Anthony Parker. I think that he is starting to show a lot. I know he's been in the league for like 5 or 6 years, but I think that this year he's starting to get more of an opportunity, and he's showing what he has.
Okay. I went with Andy Fantuz. I counted him as a player. I don't care what anyone else says. This guy's going to play football again. He counts. I'm picking him. I also went with Brad Sinopoli. I think that is a no-brainer. I think right now with the players playing, so this doesn't count Fantuz, Sinopoli's the best Canadian receiver in the league. I think when Fantuz comes back, I think we saw last year that Fantuz still has a lot left in the tank, but you can't not pick Brad Sinopoli. I went with Lamar Durant. I think this is a guy who's really showing something this year. He's had a couple good games for Calgary. I think he could be the next big Canadian receiver. He's a free agent after this season. I would expect him to get a lot of coin. And maybe this is recency bias, but I went with Nick Dembski. He had a couple really good games for the Rough Riders the first couple of weeks, and he was a little bit quieter against the Ticats, but I think he's another guy in a contract year, about to become a free agent, wants to show a little something. And there's just, he also can return kicks. So, you know, we picked a return guy, but maybe if my return guy goes down, you got Dembski in there that can fill in. And he's a pretty exciting player. So I went with Dembski.
Yeah, it was between Parker and Dembski for that last receiver's position. I pondered it for a while too. I think he's going to be a really good player in the years to come.
So this is maybe the second hardest group to pick, I think, in the offensive line, because, again, as much as we like to fancy ourselves experts, it's really hard to figure out offensive line play. So I started with the tackles. I separated mine offensive tackles, offensive guard, and center. Did you just do all your line together, or how did you?
No, I got all the positions.
Okay, cool. So let's start with tackle then, if you don't mind.
All right, I got Dan Fetterkyle from Calgary, and David Fulcou on the left side from the BC Lions.
Oh, so this is one where we're completely different. I took Chris Van Zyl, the Welland boy who has been playing for the Argos, and I went with Spencer Wilson on the other side. I think those are two guys that I think you can really rely on. Although I do like your picks. Interesting. It's interesting that we both picked two different guys. It's the first time we've had that many different picks. We didn't have anyone similar. Interesting. What'd you do at guard?
See, a guard, right guard, I got Bombin. I just think this guy, I just want this guy on my team if I'm making a team. He's so versatile, he can play a lot of positions. On the O-line, I got him at right guard. And at left guard, I got Simeon Rotier.
Oh, okay, you went with the veteran. I, too, picked Bombin for exactly the reason you said. I picked him because he's so versatile. If one of our Canadian tackles get hurt, you can kick him out there. Perfect guy. You want a guy like that on your team. My second one, I went with Suk Chung, the third-year man out in Winnipeg. I just think that guy's nasty, big, mean. Looks to me like he's going to have a very long career. Great pick by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers a couple years ago, and I just really like the way he plays. So he was my pick at guard. Center, where did you go there?
I went with Justin Sorensen. Now, the guy's a player. I was picking between him and Mike Filer. I love Filer, but I just had to give the edge to Sorensen.
Yeah, I went Homer and took Mike Filer. Look, if I'm gonna pick my all-Canadian team, I'm going to pick the guys I want on this squad. And no disrespect to Justin Sorensen, but Mike Filer's my guy. I just think the way he's handled himself, not only on the field, obviously a very good player, but just how he's filled in for a guy that was so well beloved in Marwan Hage. I think that speaks a lot to the type of player he is, where he didn't let that pressure get to him. I think he's been excellent since he's been in the starting lineup, so he's the guy I went with. Defensive tackle, Mike. There was quite a bit of talent at this position. Who did you go with? Who are your two DTs?
The two DTs were Westerman and Capicotti. Now Capicotti is a rotation guy, but I feel like he can play that outside position, which is a harder position to find Canadian playing in that position. So I went with him.
So I went with Jamal Westerman, just like you did, but I went with someone. I went with a young guy. Now we were allowed to, like, one of the caveats, I didn't mention this, that Adam said, he goes, you can go based on previous experience or you can be projecting. I went with a guy out in Edmonton named Kwaku Boateng. I just think this guy has played great. I heard a lot about him in the lead up to the draft. I was just very impressed with how this kid has played so far this season. I think he could have a big, big future ahead of him. So I did go with a young guy, a guy that hasn't proven it, but I like what he brings to the table.
Yeah, I had a couple of guys that are pretty young that haven't really proven themselves yet, but I thought that they had good potential, just like you did with him. So now for the inside guys,
big hoggies in the middle.
Yeah, I went with Ted Laurent and Armando Sewell. I'd love to see these guys paired up in the middle with the Ticats someday, but I know it's a long shot. But I just think these two guys are the two of the best defensive tackle position guys in the league, no matter Canadian, American, Mexican, Japanese, whatever. They're two of the best, so I went with them.
Well, obviously I went with Big Teddy, but my second one, Cleon Lang. I got some nastiness on this squad, and mm-hmm. That dude, I know people out in your neck of the woods do not care for him very much, but that dude's a baller, that dude's a player, so he was a guy that I wanted on my squad. So pairing him up with Teddy in the middle there, that's a pretty fierce inside combo, if I do say so myself. Linebacker, I got to think that we're going to have some similar picks here. Who do you got in your three linebacker spots?
I got the pick that I think we'll both have, Alex Singleton. Just a tremendous football player, young guy. You just want him on your team. Then I went with Plessius. He may not be a starter, but I think that he might crack through soon. A lot of potential there that he just hasn't got to it yet, but we'll see. And then I went with Konar, new guy coming in for the Eskimos, had a hell of a first game. I think he's going to make an impact this year with JC Sherrod out. And, you know, not much, we haven't seen much of him, but I'm putting him on my team.
No, I've really liked Adam Konar as well, and I tried to find a spot for him. But I went with Alex Singleton. Obvious choice. The guy's a beast. He was Adam's pick for the most outstanding Canadian this year. And when I saw it, I believe I said, God damn, why didn't I pick him? I went with Enoch Mwamba. I think he's still got a lot of talent, a lot of skill. I still think he can play at a high level. I think he's he's just a guy that I like. I like him as a football player, so I think he's one of the best. And I slid a DB down as my last linebacker. He's a guy who's played a little linebacker. I went with Antoine Pruneau out of Ottawa. Solid dude. Plays a lot at safety, but has played some Sam. And it was hard to find a ton of linebackers. There's a few, and there's some talent out there, but all three of the guys that I have starting experience, and I think that was important for me when I made my decision. Now we're going to head to what I think is probably the most difficult position to pick, and this is probably why Adam gave us the caveat, if you can start DBs at any position. Because finding Canadian DBs that play in certain positions in the secondary was incredibly difficult. Now, I split mine up to the four DBs and safety. Did you do the same?
I tried to get some DBs in there, but there was a couple safeties that I put in, so it's just kind of five guys.
It's a mishmash. Okay, then let's get your five guys out there. Who do you got?
I got Courtney Stephen, Taylor Loeffler, Jeff Hecht, Anthony Thompson, and Craig Butler.
Oh, okay, not a bad five. I went with Courtney Stephen, Arjun Colquhoun, who is the one true corner on this team, Jermaine Gabriel, Taylor Loeffler, obviously is going to be my safety, and I went with Chris Ackie out of the Alouettes. And, you know, now that you mentioned Craig Butler, that was kind of a mistake to not put him on there, but I still like the guys I got there. I think, like I said, it was really tough pick of these guys. I think out of all the guys I have, I think four of my five DBs are safeties. And I think I can tell you where the Canadian talent goes when it plays in the secondary in the CFL.
Yeah, they're all at safety. It goes back years and years and years. It's been a spot where coaches have penciled in a Canadian.
Yeah, going all the way back to a guy that we know and love, Rob Hitchcock, was a great Canadian safety for the Ticats all those years ago. All right, now we're going to get to some special team stuff. Let's start with the kicker. Mike, who is your Canadian kicker?
Going to go with Rob Maber. He's proven himself over the years. I like him as a kicker, and that's why I went with him.
Are you using him both as kicker and punter?
Yes.
Oh, see, I separated mine. I went with Maber as a punter because, duh, best punter in the game, I think, without saying. But for kicker, I went with Sean White. I think that's a guy who... I don't think he gets enough publicity. We all talk about Justin Medlock, and Justin Medlock wasn't obviously eligible for this team because he's not Canadian, but Sean White's a really damn good kicker, and I don't think gets enough love out there. So I went with him as my kicker, but Maver as a punter, that's a no-brainer. But good for you for saving a roster spot. Now, we also picked... We were given two special teams players. Now, this is like your cover guys or what have you. This was fun because now we get to kind of talk about some unheralded players. So, Mike, who did you pick? Who did you pick here?
For the cover guys, eh?
Yeah.
Well, I went with Plessius again as because I'm pretty sure he's doing it still in Montreal, and he had a hell of a career on the special teams with Hamilton. And I couldn't really find who else I picked. Who do you got, Josh?
Who do I got? I went with Mike Daly.
Yeah.
Ticats player. You know, obviously we're gonna side a little bit with Ticats guys, but I think Mike Daly's one of the best special teams guys out there. I had Frederick Plessius penciled in here, and then I remembered a former Eskimo, current Winnipeg Blue Bomber, who is an absolute beast on cover teams, and that's Mike Miller. This guy is awesome. Absolutely awesome. And it's funny because, again, it might be recency bias, but there was when Winnipeg played Saskatchewan, he had a whale of a game on special teams. And after that, I was like, oh, that's who I want. Boom. Mike Miller. So that was my second guy.
Well, I'm going to cheat here and I'm going to say Mike Miller too. How about that?
That's fine. Nothing wrong with helping one another out. All right. Last position here. Very fun. Who do you have as your return man?
Now, I was thinking that new kid in Calgary with the interesting name, just because he had a return a couple weeks ago, and he seems like a good return guy, but I'm going to have to go with experience and say Iannuzzi. I mean, he's been playing return, he's been second fiddle to a lot of guys, but I think that he puts up pretty good numbers when he gets the ball, so like nothing, I don't think he's ever returned a touchdown or anything like that, but I think that he, you know, gets a good average when he gets the opportunity.
The man in Calgary you're talking about is Tunde Adeleke, and he is my return man because the dude takes one to the house in his first career game. There was all that talk. What's his name? Nate Behar said he'd streak through Edmonton if he took one back, and then he did, and that's so much fun. And this kid's got a ton of speed. Was a great return man in university. I can't knock your Iannuzzi pick. That's a solid pick because you're right. He has been on specials for a very long time and has been overshadowed by guys like Chris Rainey, for example, out there in BC right now. But he's a really solid returner. You're not going to get anything huge from him, but you're also not going to get anything bad out of him either. Like when we think about Brandon Banks is like a boom or bust guy. You either get a great return or he loses you 5 yards. You're not going to get that out of Iannuzzi. But I had to take this kid, A, because I wanted to say his name, and B, because that was just an awesome debut and I want to talk about it a little bit. So yeah, give me the kid out of Carleton that's now in Calgary, and I'll be pretty happy.
Yeah, you don't really see the Canadian return guys with a ton of speed like what he has. So it's going to be exciting watching him. If if he can replicate what he did a couple more times, then I think he should be a starting returner in this league for quite some time.
For sure. So that's it. That's the show for this week. Don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and now we're also on Google Play and Stitcher, or as always, you can listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to ask us a question like Adam did, and he brings the heat when he comes with his questions, so anyone out there who wants to ask us questions really got to step their game up. These are always excellent and fun to answer. You can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82. And, of course, you can always post your questions in the comments section when the podcast goes up on 3downnation.com. And once again, I will say we have yet to get one, but if you want to fire off an email to us, you can. We are podski@gmail.com. I have a feeling that's just going to lay dormant with no emails coming our way, but such is life in the year 2017. So that was episode 79 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.